My name is Tom C., and I am an alcoholic. Hey, guys. Welcome to Carrying the Message Through Public Service, Public Information, by the grace of God and the power of the program. I've not found it necessary to take a drink today, and my family and everyone is very grateful for that. Yes. Can we have a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years? Our speakers will speak for approximately 20 minutes. Again, I am Tom, and I am an alcoholic. Hey, guys. I have been very fortunate. I'm from Urbandale, Iowa, and I've been on the PI committee and chair of our district committee for about 2 years now, and on the committee for four. And I tell you, it's been a blessing. I've had a chance to do some things. I'm fortunate that our district has had, you know, we have a little bit of money. The groups are strong, and they donate. So my committee has had a little bit of money to work with, and we have right now we've got some ads running in movie theaters, which was a blessing. Turns out it's funny because the guy that we were trying to get in with, he's from Omaha, and it's pretty expensive to advertise in this movie theater. It's like, I don't know, $800 a week, and we got 12 weeks. But it turns out I called the guy and said, "Hey, Jim, we're trying to put some ads in the movie theater." He goes, "Well, I'm an alcoholic." I said, "All right, man." So he gave us a heck of a deal. We got $800 for 12 weeks in the movie theater. So that was a blessing. Yeah. And we've got ads and buses, phone book covers. We have a very active public information and CPC. We work together, but it's been a blessing. And it's funny. I was talking to my fiance. She's a CPC person, and you do these things, and you don't know who sees it. And you never know. And my hope is that, you know, if one person can see this and is saved by it, then, you know, it's been worth it. It's been well worth it. Our first speaker tonight is Gene M. from Florida, and I'm excited to see him. I like his pants. He said they were taken in customs. I was wondering though, customs in Florida? What the heck? But Gene.
My name's Gene. I'm an alcoholic. Just don't look down here below. It's a long story. I lost my pants and cannot blame it on alcohol, so don't worry. The show must go on. Just so you know, at the end of the meeting, I have these little handouts, but I only have one each, too. I also lost them, but so fight for them. They might be very helpful. I'm Gene. I'm an alcoholic. St. Pete, Florida. Honored to be here. My sobriety date, March 29th, 1996. I don't know if I mentioned this, but I am a member of the Step Up to the Plate group in St. Petersburg, Florida. And we are an open step group. And if you're ever in St. Petersburg, come check us out Tuesday nights. Okay, enough with that. I had the privilege to be a public information chair. And I got kind of like some of us, you don't raise your hand, you end up doing it. And that's why I took on this job. I was trying to learn everything I possibly can do in service. Public information was attractive to me. I have no idea why. I started, something happened where, you know, you shouldn't have to go to, no offense to the corrections and treatment facilities, but you shouldn't have to go to jail or treatment to hear about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it seemed like that's what was happening. It's like the suffering alcoholic. It was like we're kind of putting another tradition. The only requirement for membership to get into AA is you got to go to treatment or jail. And I've been able to meet people that got so much money they can bypass the court system, never even see a jail, and likewise with treatment. So I thought about that, and I just realized, wow, public information. And for me, here's this: when I was a public information chair. We have to go carry message and explain to normal people what AA is and what AA isn't. And I don't know about you, but I go to meetings all over the country, and there's some meetings that can use a public information presentation on what AA is and isn't. It's not to be mean, but it's good for us as members to get that practice of presentations. You could ask them, "Hey, would you like us to have a workshop there?" And I guess why I was asked here to speak today is not so much to tell you about PI. I believe most of us know. But I think some of us have trouble. We could just read the black part of literature like this stuff. But how do we get it in our own towns? And I came up with creative ideas. I know I respect the traditions. However, I'm not bound by the traditions. I understand the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous aren't some barbed wire fence and we just operate inside that fence. And once we hit the fence, we got to go back. I take it over the fence and learn what can I do? Where can we take Alcoholics Anonymous? For me, I'm an energetic guy with no pants, but I'm energetic. And I got a hold of the survey. And I don't know if you guys seen these surveys around here. Now, if you find yourself, God, I studied public information. What can I do? I read it. I heard about Jack Alexander. I understand when the article came out, AA was 2,000 and now we're 8,000 members. Okay, I know that. But who really wants to hear that? We do. We love it. But what about the alcoholic right now behind the dumpster somewhere? You know, do they know about Alcoholics Anonymous? I think why public information adopted into my heart is because there's a wall out there. We can't insist they come here, but do they know about AA? Do they know how to find us? Do they know? That's why something happened for me in Alcoholics Anonymous with public information where it's more heartfelt. I just want them to know. So when I went to normal people and did these presentations, they automatically, it felt like there was this invisible wall. Hey, I'm not alcoholic. I only drink two. They always say that too. And then it's like, I understand that. I just want you to know what we're doing is for some reason, you guys, when you hear a loved one come up to you or a friend or a neighbor and comes up to you, God, I got this toothache. What do I do? For some reason, everybody in the world automatically knows to say, well, why don't you go to a dentist? I don't have a problem with my teeth, but why don't you go to a dentist? And I use that to explain to them and they feel okay. I say, that's why we're here today as the Public Information Committee of Alcoholics Anonymous. We just want you to know, and say it again to really make them feel comfortable. We know you're not alcoholic, but should you meet a loved one going down that path, why not have the opportunity to help us? You know, just divert them to us. So, you know, you'll love that. And that's made it a little comfortable when I'm talking to the church, the schools, and various other items. And I got a copy of this up here, so first one gets it. Also, when GSO put out these public service announcements, I don't know if you witnessed this, but there are AA members that don't understand that and start freaking out and calling us. You get phone calls. You're breaking tradition. You're on the TV and God, you shouldn't do that. And you got to educate them. And then you got to act how nice you are to back to them. And what worked for me is not arguing, not constantly being seen as someone negative. Like, you know, when we used to argue about how happily sober we are with people. No, it was I just printed something up. I posted Times Square GSO, and I wrote the question, did I see an advertisement? And I made flyers. And that's as simple as that. And then we handed it to someone on our committee, and they dispersed that. There are people that haven't seen this, but it did quiet the pain of people not seeing it on TV. And I always ask, if we don't let anyone know about Alcoholics Anonymous, how are they going to find us? And it returns me to, you shouldn't have to go to jail or treatment to hear about AA. It's a great way that they do, but you shouldn't have to go. And then when you do hear it, you hear some people complaining about jail and treatment talk. You know, so when you hear them, go up and ask them if they'd like to join the Committee of Public Information. It might help. And with that, Bill's last message. At our home group, when we close the meeting after everyone's done arguing or whatever you want to call it, we end our meeting with the reading of Dr. Bob's last talk. Just soothes everything. And Bill, I know he don't get much credit for his last message, but his last message was anonymity. And he gives credit to the growth of Alcoholics Anonymous because of that. And the concept of anonymity is what helped us grow. And I know back then the news were freaking out, so aggravated with us that we found what they thought was a cure for alcoholism. Our insistence to not tell them anything about it. Sorry. What do you mean? Come on, I got a story. I'm going to get fired. I can imagine what they were saying, but we word it nicely in our AA literature. But We just want to be recognized for our good deeds, our principles, Alcoholics Anonymous, not our members. Simple. They got the point. And I think what Bill said, that concept of anonymity, is why we grew so much. And public information is kind of our job. I mean, there's so many committees. And when I was a chair, and I first started doing it by myself, oh, bad job. What I did was I made up all the things I think that could do a successful committee. Because what I first did with other committees I was in, I'd arranged a committee meeting. If I tricked everyone into coming to my workshop, they wanted to join. I had no jobs to give them. So I learned as a chair, first get all your positions, what your desire can be. Even if it's wrong, it sounds crazy, whack, don't worry. The committee's going to tell you we don't want that anyway. That's okay. But I had, like, the coffee maker for the meeting. Who's going to hand out literature? Who's going to drop off pamphlets at hotels? So put all these positions. I don't care. Tape lending, whatever. Workshop organizer. Just have these all, and it's okay to leave them vacant. So if you do spiritually trick everyone into coming to your workshop, you have vacancies. And then you got the alternates. And then they could have their own committees. And that's what helps us. I got to say, it was just outstanding. And with that survey, I'm reading that on there. That survey, you'll see 88% white. You'll see there's a lot more in medical that come here. That's not to be negative. It's like, wow, that's what AA did a long time ago in the Public Information Committee. And then look what happened. Now, what are we doing for public information? Repeating the same thing we heard in our public information literature, our books? No, when I see low numbers, that's where the work needs to be done for public information. Maybe we should be going to attack 5%, 2%. Young people, I see 2%. Maybe it fluctuates from 3% here and there. Maybe we should do that. I remember when I was doing presentations in the college, and they go, Gene, you public information people come here a lot and you talk about young people and you say there's so many young people in AA and this and that. I got to ask you, are there really any? I thought about that. Well, and she was trying to be nice and, hint around, well, why do you keep sending all these old people to college to give these presentations? I was like, wow, I know, I got gray hair now too, I'm blending in, but it was just, I said, that's a good challenge. I said, I'll get back to you. And I appreciate her for that, she really took an interest in what we're doing here. So I went and got a bunch of young people together and said, let's start a young people's panel, speaker panel. Boom. That took off like wildfire. I mean, and you can do that too. And, just have little workshops. Workshops are very important. About presentations, because sometimes we like to say, what's funny in AA isn't funny in normal presentations. You guys, we'll say something strange, and they'll go, uh-oh, security, so you gotta watch what you say. So do that in your own towns, and you can find me, and I'll tell you, I know we don't have much time to go into detail to explain how I did it, and I made a lot of mistakes, and I'll tell you them all. But what we did was we improved. Second, we got young people active. So they were doing presentations. We had practice workshops. People were embarrassed to give presentations. They were trying to remember, and they felt like they were reading off cue cards, like I was. And I was like, just get rid of what it was like and what happened when you first came to AA. But what made people feel comfortable, we would hold a workshop and have practice presentation with popcorn, and we would act like normal people and just sit in the audience, and they would give these 5-minute practice presentations. What works, built a workshop, you got to have food there or not going to show up. And then you get more people involved like that, making spaghetti, something affordable. And then hold your workshop on what you got to do. The YPG thing really... I really like that, and I think it's very strong in case that gets asked to you. Are there any young people? Are there older people? Get them all. Then maybe start attacking the list on them, like I told you. You know where the work has to be done. If you hear anyone saying, God, it seems like AA service is done. No, it's not. The survey is not something to just observe. That's my service pamphlet right there. I know where the work needs to be done, and that's where I'm going. No sense preaching to the choir what you hear. And one mistake I made was handing out literature I didn't read. I thought I was alone. But, you know, because I used to do that, give big books to poor, helpless souls that I, you know, never read it at the time. But I got embarrassed when they asked me, what about this? And I said, I don't know. Amongst you guys and then amongst normal people, I started being okay with saying, I don't know. There's nothing wrong with that, the honesty in saying, I don't know. But I say, you know, if I'm going to hand out a literature, I'm going to kind of know what's in it at least, rather than just handing it out. And that helped me a lot. So there's another mistake I'm sharing with you. So I don't know how much longer I got, but one thing I just really want to touch on is a lot of people heard of AA, and me as a public information trusted servant thinks my job's done in that area. Unfortunately, they don't know what them two letters stand for. If you challenge yourself to go out and just ask somebody, hey, what do you think AA is? What do you think AA is? You know what they're going to say. You smoke cigarettes, drink coffee, and curse during meetings. The general public has some really bad image of us at this time. We know that's not true. So maybe the public information could focus more on, hey, we got a good thing here. You know, look at us all here this weekend, but we got a really good thing here. Should that alcoholic behind that dumpster, in that martini bar, in jail, cooking up his nice batch of buck, ready to drink it, do they know what AA can do for them? It's more than not drinking. So our public information committee should maybe focus a little more on that. You know? And just say, no, you don't have to go to jail or treatment. We want you here. We want you to know exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous will do for you. Because I can't imagine how AA will survive. I mean, groups need, I need people to take the steps through. I took the steps, but I don't think the steps came complete till I took somebody else through them. If you just keep that in my head and I can't get it out, I don't know what's going to happen. So we, the Public Information Committee, are bringing the newcomers to the meeting. We've done our job. Let's be friendly with our friends. Keep in mind, when you're doing public information presentations, the only cons you might have in your workshops is dress code. Some people have that. Don't say, come to AA, you can get cigarettes. That's not funny. Ask me how I know that, some of my speakers. Practice presentation workshops were not started out of a good idea. They were started because they made some mistakes. So keep that in mind. And I'll be up here. I'll be around the meeting. You'll find me anywhere. I just love Alcoholics Anonymous. But I think this is later on. I always think about the first 100 in AA. In our big book, it does say that. First 100 in AA. What if they got together in a room like this and said, you know, we got a good thing here. Got my wife back. I got money. Let's not tell anyone about Alcoholics Anonymous. Where do you think all of us would be tonight? You know, better pick a good jail, good nut house, you know. So now that we're in AA, what are we, ninjas? No, let's share about what Alcoholics Anonymous is, not who Gene is or who you are. So bring the love back in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they will come, and AA, long after we're gone, will be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gene. We do have a good thing here, don't we? We've got to share that. Our next speaker, Jennifer D. from Manitoba, Canada. And she made it through customs. All right.
Hi, everybody. My name's Jennifer, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jennifer.
I'm here from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and I'm public information, cooperating with professional communities and special needs committee for Manitoba East, which is Area 80. And I just thought that I'd let you guys know that Manitoba is one of 10 provinces in Canada, and its geographic mileage is 261,000 square miles. So in terms of geography, we represent, you know, it's a huge endeavor trying to carry the message back to that big of a geographic field. Now, I got a phone call from Mary Claire back, I don't know, about 3 months ago, and she asked whether I would speak at this meeting. And I have 5-year sobriety. My dry date is April 19th, 2005. I moved to Winnipeg about 18 months ago to make it my home, and I've been public information CPC chair for 6 months almost today. So I'm really new in this whole piece, and I said to her, with, you know, why did you pick me to speak? Like, I mean, I'm not sure that I even know how to open the manual yet. And she said that she was looking for a female from Canada. So I got my lesson in humility, and hopefully you guys get to hear a little bit about what we're doing and can bring some of it to wherever we are, because an alcoholic is an alcoholic no matter where they find their seat. So I was elected in our January assembly of this year. The PICPC chair actually sat vacant coming out of our elections in October. And I stood because it was vacant and because I did have some normal world experience that I thought I could bring to the table at this level of service. And so I have spent the last 5 months meeting with my committee, which is about 5 people that all come from the city of Manitoba of about 750,000. And we have we conducted a workshop in April of this year where we invited all of our DCMs to attend, of which we had about half of them attend. And what we have found is that one of the biggest challenges that we're facing is creating communication within AA, you know, letting people know what exactly PI does, what exactly individuals can do for PI, how it affects the members at the member level, not thinking that it's just some committee out here, you know, that there's actually tangible things that can be done. And so we met and we did a workshop and we covered off the traditions as they apply, the anonymity as it applies, and different ways as to how we can actually take inventories and what needs to be done. And what came out of that was that we're pushing a lot back onto our districts. What's happened in our area is that the committee has become a little top-heavy and it sort of has given the districts a bit of a, well, what are we doing kind of approach. So we've taken on a role where we're saying, how do we support the districts, right? So how do we go back out into the district and make sure that your district inventory is being done? I spent a lot of time with the oldest of our old-timers in Manitoba, and he has repeatedly said to me, you know, the heartbeat of AA is at the district level. You know, the heartbeat of AA is at the district level. So as chair of the committee, it reminds me that my job is actually the least important job in public information. You know, I may send out some emails, and I may help to organize a couple of workshops, and I may set a couple of time frames, but I am the least important person in PI in Manitoba. You know, I am to serve everyone else that might need support or guidance in terms of getting that information out. So we are in the process of doing district inventories across the eastern half of the province and making sure that the districts all know where their school boards are, you know, where their libraries are, where their third responders are, and are actually finding mechanisms within the groups, in some cases really large areas, right, that have to be serviced. And so how do we do a combination of rural-urban split and, you know, small-urban, large-rural? And it's starting to catch. We probably, out of our 11 districts, we probably have 4 that are right up there and start to be able to help their neighbors, you know, that are actually delivering literature, talking the message, getting all of that out there. At the committee level, we had to take a look and say, well, if the districts are all going to be doing this, then what are we going to actually do at the committee level? Because I'm a firm believer that I don't want anybody at a meeting for the sake of having them at a meeting. You know, meetings are not just an opportunity to have a cup of coffee and find out what so-and-so is doing. I can do that by the phone. So we're gonna make sure that anybody that's coming to a meeting, that their time is utilized. and that they're given tasks at the end of it to do, so that they are active and involved, and that nobody that comes out is feeling like it's a waste of time. Biggest challenge is this, right? If my furthest away district attended, it's a 6-hour drive, right? So when people are having to travel 6 and 8 hours to get to a meeting, we need to look at other ways to communicate, because actually having a face-to-face meeting in our area is not necessarily the way to go. So at our last meeting, which was in May, what we did was we divided public information into 6 silos, right? So we have 1 for education, we have 1 for law and justice, we have 1 for third responders, we have 1 for education, we have 1 for something else, and we have 1 for, oh, health, 1 for health, and we have 1 for communication. And each committee member took on 1 of those and is going out to do a strategic inventory of all of the organizations and associations and umbrella groups for Eastern Manitoba. So they're going to come back. We're meeting it on July 17th. Everybody's going to come back with a mini strategic plan of sort of what happens in the next calendar year in all of those areas. And then we're going to review that, meet again in August, and develop an annual calendar. So that'll be the committee's role, right? So the committee will look after any association meetings, any trade shows, any networking events that we're going to find parole officers at, you know, like that type of meeting. So the committee will be working on those big overarching areas. The districts are going to be working on their local inventory and getting the message out. And then we're also going to be starting in probably October, doing sort of 1 theme a month, right? So we're going to have October as doctors, right? And we're going to do the type of workshop that Jean referenced, where we're going to have an alcoholic doctor come in and talk to whomever wants to listen about how to talk to a doctor. You know, whether it's your family physician, if it's a member, you know, going out and spreading the message, or if we're talking to a group, then what they need to hear. Because different professions have different hot buttons in terms of what will, you know, sell them the message, right? So just because, you know, my message of AA is my story, and it's important, and it's what keeps me sober when I share that with you. It's what keeps me sober when I know that my experience is beneficial. Not everybody is going to hear my message, right? And the closer I can get to being able to speak in a language that you hear, right, then the clearer the message is going to become. So we're looking internally within AA to find, you know, a parole officer who's also an alcoholic, a cop who's also an alcoholic, that will come in and do these mini workshops and help us with that messaging. And I think that that will give people the confidence that they need to be able to say, you know, well, what do I have to offer? And be able to know that what they have to offer is more than enough. In the last 5 months, I've had a lot of ways that being chair has really impacted my life in a positive role. I was, you know, blessed through the grace of God to come into this program back in 2005 and be able to get sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous by attending 9 meetings a week. And I was fortunate enough that I didn't go to treatment center and I didn't go to jail. But I have encountered in my life in the last 6 months different members of my life that have gotten sober through treatment centers and jails. And I've had the opportunity in the last 6 months to actually go out and listen to what parole officers are thinking, right, and what doctors are thinking and what nurses are thinking, and to see how they actually are handling the still active alcoholic. And I have been absolutely astonished at what they don't know. You know, I've been absolutely astonished to see, you know, a nurse want to argue with an addict who's being deprived of their drug and think that they might actually win. You know, I've been absolutely astonished to see doctors think that if they fix the disease, they're going to fix the problem, right? And not recognizing that the fact is that there is so much more, right? There's so much more, because as long as we have within the alcoholic that piece unhealed, right, that piece that you know, is just broken, that is just disassociated, that just thinks that we can take care of ourselves, right? That the disease is never done, right? The disease is going to find something else no matter what substance we've given up. And it's so important to me on a much clearer level than it's ever been before that that's the message we need to share, that I need to share today, right? That message that you can take away the substance, but you still have a broken, disease-ridden person until you've given them a way to actually heal at all levels of healing. And it's such an important message for people to get because I had honestly no idea how many people thought that, you know, alcoholics could fix themselves if they just got better, right? And I had no idea how many people did not know, right, what they did not know, in that this is a disease of the spirit, right? This is a disease of disconnection, and it's a disease that we can and do recover from when we work this program one day at a time. Thank you all very much for your time today.
Thank you, Jennifer. That was good.
260,000 square miles.
Boy, I have a hard time getting people to drive across Des Moines and show up at a meeting. That's amazing. Our next speaker, Dick C. from Minnesota. He's just up the street from us. I'm excited.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dick, and I'm an alcoholic. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since January 5th of 1981, which was also my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's our story. That's Alcoholics Anonymous' story, that you can come to Alcoholics Anonymous and stay sober for the rest of your life. We don't shoot our wounded if you come back and or decide to go out and practice a little bit. But the message is that you can get and stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to tell you I'm a sober active member of the Minnetonka Big Book Study Group, which meets on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock in the city of Minnetonka in Minnesota, just a mere 7 hours south of Winnipeg. if we do all this PI work, if we're doing all this public information stuff, delivering, getting in touch with people, delivering public service messages, what good does it do? I mean, are we really doing any good? And I'm here to tell you that I got sober as a result of a public service announcement that was delivered in Area 36. I escaped Minneapolis, which is where I'm from. I live in Area 35 or 36. But I was, you know, I used to think that I was born and raised in Deep Haven, Minnesota, but I actually wasn't. I was born and raised in Area 36, District 7. But I had gone to northern Minnesota, which is Area 35, to try to get away from me, and I showed up, and I continued to do the things that I did that caused me to drink. And I was sitting at home on a Sunday morning, the 4th of January of 1981, and I heard a public service announcement on the radio of the local radio station in this small town of 30,000 people that I was living in at the time. And it's, you've probably heard them. It says, if you think you have a problem with alcohol, look us up in the phone book. And they're real simple. Sometimes they'll say, if you want to drink, it's your business. If you want to stop, it's our business. They're very simple 10, 15-second public service announcements, and that's when the moment of clarity happened in my life. I had not yet come in contact with Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody really told me what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I only knew that I had spent my entire life trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And when I heard the public service announcement, I knew that that had a possibility of being it. You see, I'd just gotten fired from a job. The cause of my being fired was because I was drinking on the job. So I thought there might be a minuscule chance that alcohol played a role in my discomfort. And it's also important, I think, for us to remember that when people like me hear the public service announcement and are given some accurate information about Alcoholics Anonymous so that they can go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, it's also incumbent upon us that when I arrive, you know what to do with me. And I arrived at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there were three guys that knew what to do with me. And I got 12-step at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. A man shared with me enough of his life until he saw my head bobbing like this, like, yeah, 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 that's me, yeah, yep. And once he saw that I was had my head bobbing and he had given me enough information, he set the hook, just like a good fisherman in our part of the world. And he set the hook by saying, it says in our big book that we're supposed to give a message that has depth and weight. And the message that had depth and weight by the person who 12-stepped me said, you don't have to live like that anymore. And he had me begging, how do you do that? I don't know how to live that, not live that way. And as I said, I've been sober and a sober active member of Alcoholics Anonymous since I came in the doors and went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because AA got me there and there were people in the meeting that knew what to do with me once I was there. I left that town in northern Minnesota, came back to the Twin City area where I'm from, and I was sitting in a meeting. I think I had about 3 or 4 years of sobriety. And not, you know, there's a, one of the seminars here is, I've been sober a while now, so what's next? Well, I was asking that question, what next? And there was a guy who was our, had all these alphabet soups going on in our meeting. I didn't know what they meant, but there was a guy who was our GSR, and I wasn't sure what the GSR did, but he gave a report. And the only thing I heard was that he said that the Public Information Committee was looking for people to help distribute the pre-recorded public service announcements to the radio stations in our area. I said, I'm there. Because it seemed like to me that it was a direct payback for me, in a way that was meaningful. I could take those public service announcements to the radio stations, and there might be somebody else like me that had a moment of clarity when they heard the public service announcement. I'd love to tell you that I knew that happened. But I went to work on the Public Information Committee and had a long and rather unillustrious career in general service doing that kind of work. I worked on a PI committee and I did a number of those kinds of things. Eventually gravitated over to the Archives Committee because our history has fascinated me so. But at about 5 or 6 years of sobriety, I became really interested to find out the sort of chain of command as to how did the public service announcement that I heard end up at a small FM radio station in a small community in northern Minnesota. How did that happen? Northern Minnesota is a very broad, it's not as big as Manitoba, but it's a very broad geographical area. There are not a lot of large cities. The largest city is around a little under 100,000 people. Most of the communities are 30 to 50,000 people scattered throughout the area. And so it takes a lot of work to distribute these public service announcements around to these relatively small communities that have each of them, you know, those kinds of communities all have their own FM and AM radio stations. And so how did that happen? And I went back and I started talking to some of the guys up in that area, and they remembered who was the public information chair of the area committee at that time. And it was a man by the name of Frenchie. I've never come in contact with Frenchie. If there's any other, I know there's a couple of guys from northern area here today, but or northern Minnesota. But I don't know if Frenchie's still around, if he's still sober or whatever. But it was interesting to know, and then I found out that what he did is he personally duplicated all of those public service announcements that he then had local committee people in the DCMs, in the districts and so on, to be able to distribute those public service announcements to the radio station. An interesting little tidbit about how I got to hear that public service announcement is that I was home alone after being fired from that job. Decided I shouldn't be drinking at work. I don't understand that. I thought that was a little short-sighted. But, and my wife was at work. And she happened to be the disc jockey that played the public service announcement. Now, if she were here today, she's since died. But if she were here today, she would tell you that she did not play it for me. She described me as a crazy man, not an alcoholic. And that's, you know, that's sort of an aside. That's because she had alcoholism riddled in her family. Drinking to excess was not uncommon in her experience. Just it's what I, the way I acted when I drank, that was crazy to her. But her normal shift at the radio station was 8 to midnight. And by the time she got done doing all the stuff the FCC requires you to do, she would leave the radio station about 12:30, which in Minnesota is last call. We have to close our bars at 1 o'clock, and so she'd be driving home between 12:30 and 1 o'clock, and all the drunks were on the road, and she was always afraid of being struck by one of those drunks coming as she was driving to our home. And so this was her little na-na-na-na-na-na, because at about 10 o'clock in the morning when she's doing this shift for other people, she's playing the public service announcement. And I hear it. I have the moment of clarity. She came home, and you could have knocked her over with a feather when I told her what I'd heard. I said, I think that this may be an answer to the problem that I've been trying to discover an answer to for most of my life. I started seeing mental health professionals when I was 18 years old because I knew I was nuts. I didn't have any idea how to live inside this skin, and as a result of working the steps and doing that work in my life, I now can live in my own skin. So I'm not going to take the full 20 minutes. I'm going to leave some of that to you because I know there's going to be people here that have a lot more experience in public information than I do, but I wanted to be for you an example of why we do this work. Because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was completely broken. I had been drinking for 26 years, drinking alcoholically for 20 of those years. My body was severely ravaged from alcoholism. I weighed 114 pounds when I came into AA. I could neither read nor write. When my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was not a piece of clothing on me that was not torn or ripped or soiled. And the mortgage holder of my home decided that they wanted to find somebody who could pay the mortgage and not just live in the house. So my home was being repossessed, and my wife at that time was deciding to leave me. So my life was not exactly a poster child for a good way to live. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in that way as the direct result of a public service announcement. And for that, I am forever grateful, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous and to the men and women who made it possible for that public service announcement to show up on that radio station at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, the 4th of January of 1981. Thanks.